Hi, everyone, and thanks for listening to the Admit One podcast, where we talk to students who have successfully navigated the college admission process and earned their ticket to college. We will be reflecting on students' profiles, which will include a discussion about their academic record, extracurricular activities, and application strategy. Today's guest is Calliope, who has finished her freshman year at Brown University, and we're excited to talk to her a little bit about how she navigated the admission process. So, Calliope, thanks so much for taking the time to come and talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this.
Cool. So talk to me a little bit about from a high school standpoint, like tell me a little bit about your high school and tell me about some of the things as you started high school. Like what were some of the things that you were involved with? We'll obviously get into detail about some of your extracurriculars, but tell us a little bit about the school you went to and what some of the things were that you were involved with.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm from New York City and I went to the Marymount School of New York, which is a kindergarten through 12th grade all-girls private school on the Upper East Side. It's very close to the Museum of Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I went there in 5th grade. So I went to a different school before that, and I went to Marymount in 5th grade. And I think that I started to do a lot of the extracurriculars that I put on my transcript when I started high school and even like my sophomore year. But my freshman year, one of the things I did that I really enjoyed was Model UN. And I don't actually even think that that ended up on my activities list, but it was definitely something that I started that I really liked. And it got me very well acclimated to high school, to meeting upperclassmen, to learning about other extracurriculars that I did end up putting on my Common App. And so that was one of the main things. And I ended up not doing it after freshman year until junior year again. So I skipped sophomore year because I had a time commitment issue with another thing that overlapped. But I did Model UN. I have been playing the violin since I was about 6. So I take individual lessons unaffiliated with my high school. But I was doing that, so a lesson a week and then practicing for those. And then I did 3 seasons of sports. So in the fall, I did junior varsity soccer. In the winter, I did fencing. And in the spring, I did badminton. And I was captain of the badminton team my junior and senior years. And I was not really captain, but like sort of a captain of the fencing team my senior year. So those are my main extracurriculars.
So you definitely had a lot going on. Do you remember when maybe you're a freshman or sophomore, do you remember like thinking about any goals that you had from a college standpoint? Like, because a lot of times people will come that I work with and they'll say to me like, oh, I'm really interested in these 3 schools. And it'll inevitably be like, you know, Brown, Harvard, Princeton, you know, places like that. And yeah. They don't always necessarily know why they're interested in those places, but it tends to be, those might be the goals. Did you have goals like that when you were starting, or was that just too far off in the distance?
So I definitely didn't have any goals of like where I wanted to go to college. I've always been a very indecisive person. And I didn't even like when my parents would talk about college. I would say like, stop, no, like, I don't want to talk about this. So I was very not focused on specific colleges. I think the goals that I set for myself were more just about my grades. Like, I wanted to get straight A's. I wanted to maintain good grades because I had done well in middle school. And I just, you know, I wanted to push myself and take hard classes and do the most I could academically to, I guess, set up myself well for college. But honestly, when I was a freshman, I wasn't even thinking about college. I kind of was just doing it for my own gratification. Like, I've always been someone who's been very academically motivated. And so I think I just wanted to do well and to get good grades just because I could.
Yeah. I think one of the things you had mentioned already that I thought was pretty interesting is that you did Model UN within your freshman year. And yeah, like on your activity list, which we'll pull up in a little bit, that's not even something that's referenced. And I think sometimes some kids, as they start, you know, their extracurricular involvement things, they're looking for things that are going to be prominent fixtures like right away. Like, okay, what should I do my freshman year that's going to jump out? And I say all the time, like, the things you do freshman year probably aren't going to end up on your application. But talk to me a little bit about how you think that experience with Model UN, you had said that, you know, you met some upperclassmen things. Like, how did that help you to do some of the really amazing things that you did towards the tail end of high school?
That's a good question. So, well, one thing I want to say even before I get into that is that no one actually told me that you could only put 10 activities on the Common App. And so some of the things that I did that didn't even make it onto the Common App, I probably wouldn't have done in hindsight had I knew you could only put 10. Mod UN was not one of those because, like I said, I really did think it set me up well. But I do wish, to anyone watching this, I wish I had known that there were only 10. And I did not need to, like, try and do everything. Because once I got to, like, sophomore, junior years, I was doing everything I could to have, like, a lot of extracurriculars. But back to your question, I think that, well, one of the main things, and this is, like, it's not as noticeable maybe, but it definitely was a change in me after doing Model UN. I felt a lot more comfortable with people from other grades. Like, I was a new freshman coming into this school with upperclassmen a lot of whom I'd never met before, with new teachers and with other new ninth graders as well. And I think that before doing Model UN, I was a little bit more shy. I wasn't really outgoing. And I think Model UN really helped me because, you know, how Model UN works, you're talking, you're representing a country and you're speaking on behalf of that country, usually to come to some kind of conclusion and some kind of, you know, a way to fix an issue. And so I think I just became a lot more outspoken. I became comfortable sharing my ideas and advocating for a country in this case. And that advocacy played a major role in my college application, I think, just in general. And I just learned to be comfortable. We would do, like, mock committees within the classroom, and I learned how to, you know, stand up for myself and to talk with people who were older than me and argue my point of view and stay strong and not be intimidated. And I think Model UN really was the, the reason for that. Also, the moderator of Model UN he turned out to be my sophomore year history teacher, and the class was very hard, but he really liked me because of Model UN, because he already knew me, and that helped a lot just in terms of, you know, you always want your teachers to like you. And he, you know, when I went to him and I asked him what I could be doing better in the class, he took the time to meet with me and really, like, work me through it. And I always felt very supported by him. And I think had I just met him when all of my peers did in the history classroom, I would have had a different experience with him as opposed to what I had because of Model UN. So,
yeah, that makes sense. And I think that, like, one of the things that's really important about just developing your profile, right? And I talk to kids about that all the time. It's like, okay, we got to think about how you're going to develop your profile to do things that are unique and interesting and stand out. And sometimes people kind of scoff at, like, oh, what does a profile development look like for a high school student? They should just be doing things that they like. And that's 100% of what I mean. Like, you should do the things that you like to do. You should just do them in ways that are different from what your peers are doing. And I don't personally think that that's any different than, like, anything else in the world. As you become a college student, as you become a professional, like, you're always trying to think about what are the things that you're going to do. And the question I get a lot of times from families is tends to be like, okay, so what should my child do? And I'll pull up your activity list in a minute here, but, like, one of the things that's pretty evident from some of the activities that you took part in is that you were able to think critically and to be innovative and kind of entrepreneurial and think about, like, what are some of the world, the things that are elements in your world that you feel like you could change. And that's really what I mean when I'm thinking about, like, profile development, is taking the kind of foundational tools that you have through things like Model UN or through, you know, being active in three different sports or playing the violin or whatever it may be, and then build off of those to create something new. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about, because we'll get into your essays where you talk about some of your STEM stuff and STEMPED and those types of things. But I'm wondering, like, service seems to be a big part of your activity list and your involvement there. Can you talk to me a little bit about, like, the role of service and kind of what, how your involvement kind of evolved from a service standpoint?
Yeah, of course. So Marymount is a Catholic school. That's also something I don't think I mentioned. And it's part of the RSHM, which is the Religious of the Sacred Heart of Mary, which is a network of schools. And one of the things, because they're Catholic schools, one of the things that they really work hard to instill in their students is a love of service and a love of giving back and just a idea of what philanthropy looks like at the high school level and even before. And so my first experiences with service were through Marymount-sanctioned activities, especially in 10th grade. We took our Marymount, because it's a religious affiliated school, every year you take some type of religion class. And so my sophomore year, the class was social justice. And for social justice, what we had to do was we had to partner with an organization and advocate for a grant of, I believe, $10,000. And the program was called MPACT. And so my organization was a organization in the city that worked with single mothers and single parents to make sure they were set up well for the future, and it looked after their children as well. And my group, actually, we were able to successfully get a $10,000 grant. We were one of the winners, which was really cool. And that was probably my first really big experience with service. Before that, I'd hosted a few back in middle school. I had done a purse drive with a shelter in the city called Women in Need, where I had encouraged my fellow classmates to bring in a purse stuffed with toiletries for Mother's Day. So I had done service before MPACT, but MPACT was really the first big thing I did. And then in 11th grade, my friend and I created something unaffiliated with Marymount, and that was one of the things that was very prominently featured on my Common application, and we called it Blessings in a Pop Grip. We partnered with an organization called Blessings in a Backpack, which fed public school-age children, K through 5th grade. We basically it fed them on the weekends, because a lot of the time when schools provide lunch, that's great during the school week. But then on the weekends, their family might not have the resources to give them 3 meals a day or even 2 meals a day. And especially during COVID, when the kids then weren't going into school, there was a huge hunger and there was a lot of food insecurity just within New York City alone. So my friend and I created these pop grips. I don't have one on my phone anymore, but they're grips that you put on the back of your phone to help you hold your phone. So we created these, and then we sold them to people, and all the proceeds went to the Blessings in a Backpack organization. And so we started that in 11th grade, and we've been doing it. I mean, not as much now, but throughout senior year, we were still very much advocating for the organization. And we ended up raising, I forget the exact number, but we ended up raising so much money that we could actually partner with a school in the Bronx, because there was so much money that we had raised that they could extend the Blessings in a Backpack program to another public school. And so we worked with this school to specifically feed their children and to provide meals to their children. And I really liked doing that because it kind of provided a face to the service I was doing. I am very passionate about social justice and I like doing service, but I think a lot of the time there's a disconnect between the people doing the service and the people who are receiving the service. And seeing that the money we were raising went to this school, and actually we were ended up being thanked by the children and by the teachers, and seeing a direct connection between the people we were helping and us, I think made the service all the more meaningful for me. And that was probably my main, I think that's what you'd see in my activity section. That was my main service experience throughout high school. And that was definitely in part because of my Marymount education and because of MPACT that I did in 10th grade. So.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it definitely leaps off the page. And I talk to kids all the time when they'll say things like, oh, all families will say, should my child do service? And I'm like, well, I mean, ethically, sure, I think that they should. But if that's not something that they're driven by or interested in, just saying I did 50 hours of service, that's not something that is elite or leaps off the your college application. But I made $50,000 for this. Well, that's elite. That's going to jump off. So I have a couple questions kind of backtracking a little bit. So it makes a lot of sense, the cause and trying to provide meals and those types of things. Did that come from anything? Where did you have experience with a group? Because obviously, you live in the city and that's probably a part of just common knowledge, but there's a lot of people who theoretically could do something like that and they don't. So what was it that kind of drove you for that particular cause?
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, like you said, one of the main things was just that we are in the city, and my friend, her name's Marcy, who did it with me. And Marcy and I think both had experiences with seeing people who were food insecure, seeing kids who are food insecure. One of the memories that I always think of when I think about what, encouraged me to start doing this was I remember on Thanksgiving one, probably about 5 years ago at this point, my mom was cooking our Thanksgiving dinner and she forgot, I think, like yams or something. And she sent me to the grocery store.
Oh, you can't lose the yams, man.
Can't forget the yams, exactly. No. So she sent me to the grocery store on Thanksgiving in like the evening to pick up yams. And on my way, I was right in front of the grocery store and I saw a man, and I believe, I don't remember if it was his wife and a kid or just a kid, but it was a man and then like a younger kid. And I believe it was his child. And they were trying to raise money to get a turkey for themselves for Thanksgiving. And obviously seeing that and knowing that I was just running in to get something to eat and then going back, or getting something for Thanksgiving and then going back to my house and my, you know, big Thanksgiving feast. Obviously seeing that is it's a very sobering experience. And my mom had given me cash, so I didn't have enough money to buy him a turkey or anything, but I did. I think I got him and his kid like a little chocolate medallion and a ginger ale, because I had asked them what they wanted and mm-hmm. they said that. And obviously I would have liked to have been able to give them a turkey or just something more than that. But I also just think more than that experience, I think just that experience in and of itself, I think that experience basically just like opened my eyes to food insecurity at a different level and mm-hmm. sort of was my first up close experience with it. And because there is like such a food disparity in New York, I mean, there are obviously extremely wealthy people and then certain areas in the city are very poor. I think there's a really large gap between sure. the food insecure people and then, you know, food secure people. And that was my first experience seeing it up close. So I'd known mm-hmm. about it before, but after, you know, seeing that, and it just that stuck with me throughout like the next couple of years. And so when I think back to, you know, what made me think about starting the Blessings in a Pop Grip thing, I think it was probably that experience. And of course, it's hard to isolate a specific experience, and I'm sure I had other experiences down the line or before that, but that's the one that I remember very vividly and that really made me realize like, oh, you know, this is something that really affects real people and their families and their children.
And something like you can do something about too, right?
And, I mean, I think and you can do something about it. And it doesn't need to be this huge thing. I mean, obviously what Marcy and I did for Blessings in a Backpack was amazing, but you also don't need to do something to that extent to give back and to help sure. and to just sort of, you know, share your privilege in a way and you know, extend that to other people.
Yeah, I always like I've had read lots of applications from students who go on, you know, 2 week service trips and those kinds of things, and obviously that's great, that there's value to doing those things. But I remember distinctly one application I read from a student he talked about how he went on this service trip for 2 weeks or whatever it was. And then he's flying back home, and on the flight home, he starts thinking to himself, like, I was just there for 2 weeks. You know, I think I did some good, but the reality is like the situation I'm leaving isn't going anywhere. And, you know, was the service for me to feel better, or was it for like these people? And so instead of just leaving it as a one-off, he then created an organization in his community to create more funding and to get more people down there. And I think that to me is the idea that, you're trying to think critically, right? And like all colleges are going to talk about your ability to think critically and to be innovative. And that at the end of the day is really what you're trying to do. And I think you do obviously a really good, amazing job with that throughout high school with this program. So the other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is the STEMPEDE program that you have as well. So tell me a little bit about what that developed from and kind of the direction that you took for that.
Yeah, so that's going to be a long answer.
No problem. Long.
But basically, Girls STEMPEDE is an initiative I started in my junior year, where basically the idea is that it's for women in STEM, and I reach out to women and ask to interview them, and then I interview them, edit the interviews, post the interviews, and the idea is that young girls who are, you know, my age, a little older, a little younger, will watch the videos that I record with these women and learn about a bunch of different careers in STEM that they could potentially do when they're older. And so my original inspiration for it was actually through the field of paleontology. So we're going to talk about my Comet app a little bit later. I believe I allude to paleontology in the personal statement, but I also might allude to archaeology. I'm not remembering 100%.
We'll pull it up. We'll go through it because that'll also be a big part of your actual Brown application.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about kind of how it starts. Yeah.
Yeah. So I loved paleontology. It was very much a hobby of mine and something that I hope in the future to take to, you know, the next level. And I would go on paleontology digs with my father. He's not in science, but he is really passionate about science. And I loved them. We would find really cool. I remember finding a shark's tooth for the first time when I was probably like 6, maybe a little older, but still very young. And just being mesmerized by it, I thought it was so cool. And so I loved paleontology, would go on these digs multiple times a year in New Jersey. My grandparents own a house in Florida, so also in Florida, once in Nova Scotia in Canada. So just all over the Eastern Seaboard. And I would love them, but when I got a little bit older, I realized that, you know, I was the only woman and especially the only young woman going on these digs. There were occasionally women, like older women with, you know, a husband or a male friend or something like that, but I was always, without a doubt, without question, the only young girl. And I was lucky because I had my father there to, you know, support me. But at the same time, I would have loved someone, you know, like me, like an older woman who wasn't there with someone else, who was just there by herself, or other young girls who were super interested in paleontology. And I never had that. And so when I got a little, you know, at first I noticed it when I was younger, but I didn't really have the means or anything to do anything with that. And so when I got a little older, when I was in high school, I would always return to that. And I think that I formed the idea of Girl Stampede long before I actually started it in my junior year. But I was thinking, you know, how great would it be to create something where I could look for other female paleontologists and I could find these women and speak to them and ask them questions. And then at first I didn't do anything with that. And then I did. And I started Girl Stampede for paleontology. And what's funny is that even though it started for paleontology, it so very quickly expanded to all of STEM, because I very quickly realized that while I like paleontology and while I want to find female paleontologists, there are so many other girls who like other very niche areas in STEM, or not so niche, but just areas in STEM, who don't see any women in, you know, older women in these careers.
And you talk about that in your essay. I think you do a really awesome job. I'll bring this up. So, and this is such a Brown question, in my opinion, of like, tell us about a time that you were challenged by a perspective that differed from your own, and how did you respond? And so you talk a lot about, you were interested in paleontology, you have this idea to create a platform for other paleontologists, and then you're struggling a little bit to find the right people to interview, and you get advice of like, why don't you broaden the search to have other people that are females in STEM? And your initial reaction is like, I don't want to do that. That's not what the idea is. And, but like, you go in that direction, you learn from it. And I think that you do a really good job in this of being able to talk about, something that is an elite component to your profile, right? Stampede. To be able to provide some depth and some context as to how you created that. But you don't focus on necessarily like the perspective that's different. A lot of times when kids write this or respond to this essay, they respond with primarily focusing on like the challenge that they faced. And you talk a little bit about that, but then you spend almost your entire second paragraph talking about, you know, the perspective that you're going to get from other females within STEM in general is broad based, and so you learn from that. And I think to me that's a really important part, is that you're not necessarily saying, okay, this was just a challenge that I faced and I learned a lesson, but it also gave you something that you wouldn't have had otherwise, and so you're able to kind of expand on what that elite component is within your profile.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I remember when, you know, when I had that meeting with the paleontologist, when I had that interview, I really was like not sure if I wanted to do that. And I mean, I respected her. I thought it was an interesting idea, but I didn't know if I wanted to, like, I didn't want to be the one to undertake that. I mean, mm-hmm. paleontology is the specific area, but did I really want to expand to all of STEM? And that's like, that's a lot. And so I, you know, I gave it a go, and then it was, you know, very successful. And I genuinely enjoy talking to women who weren't just paleontologists. And I think I arguably learned just as much from these women about other careers in STEM, but then also about some of the common, you know, themes within a woman's experience in STEM from these women who weren't paleontologists.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, yeah.
No, I think it's so interesting. So when you then create this organization, like, talk to me a little bit about the structure of the organization and like how many people are involved and those kinds of things.
Yeah. So, well, it's just me. It's not like a huge organization. But I'm like the one, you know, who interviews, who edits, who posts. It's basically all me, which is like a lot. It's a lot of effort, and it's very time consuming, especially, you know, when I'm in college now, I have a lot of other stuff that I'm doing, so it takes a lot to make sure, like, okay, you know, I have an interview scheduled today, like I have to make sure that gets edited, I have to make sure this, you know, whatever the issue is, I have to make sure that I have it all under control. The format of it is, I mean, you could even look it up right now. It's the website is girlsstampede.com, and once you're on the main website page, there are a couple of tabs. So there's a tab about me and my journey. There is a tab that has all the interviews. The interviews are posted in four parts, so each one has a name. You click on one of the parts and then it brings you to YouTube, and that's where you watch it. There's another page that's like Girl Stampede in the news, so when I've gotten any press, I have put it there just so people can see that, like, okay, this is not necessarily an accredited website, but it's one that has actually gotten coverage, and that's actually a legitimate thing. And then I have a page for this thing I do called Wisdom Wednesdays, where I ask all the women, if you could describe being a woman in STEM in three words, what three words would you use? And yes, that's the website right there. And so I think I have a page for Wisdom Wednesdays. Yeah. And you click in there and then you can see all their like little video clip responses. Anyway, so I have that. And then I have, you know, like the Contact Us page. Anyone watching this, if you know a woman in STEM, feel free to go to the website and
definitely
contact us. And then I have Instagram, of course. So on Instagram, it's a little less structured, but it's like posts. It's if I see a TikTok or an Instagram or something related to women in STEM, I'll post that. Or I'll just, you know, let my followers know that I have a video that has been uploaded to YouTube, and I'll maybe post a clip for it in Reels. So
these are things that I describe as elite, and I talk about that all the time. Like, if you're looking to be competitive at highly selective and elite institutions, elite from the standpoint of like the likelihood of admission, then you need to do things that are going to stand out and that are innovative. And to me, this is like the kind of the epitome of that. So I think it's great to be able to share it a little bit. I wanted to get into a little bit of like how you thought about your actual application and the structure behind it, because you have a lot, like you've gotten involved in a lot of different things, and you don't have very many places to talk about that within your application. So you have a main Common App essay that you write that we can talk about in a second. Maybe we can start there. But then you also have just a few supplementals that you talk about with Brown specifically. So maybe we can start with the main Common App essay, and what kind of went through your mind? What were you thinking about as you started approaching this? Like what did you want to convey? Were there areas of focus? Like, did you go back and forth on ideas? Talk to me a little bit about the thought process there.
So I'm lucky in that I decided that I wanted it to be about discovery, and I wanted three different moments to feature prominently in it. And I remember it was early my... Let me think about this. I want to say early my senior year that I wrote it, but it might have even been over the summer that I wrote it. And it was a very rough draft, but I had all three memories there. And well, actually, that's not true. I had two of the memories, and I had a third memory that I ended up changing out for the final memory that I have. So it was very much very early done in a format that I knew I could work with, and I wanted to edit it, and I knew it was going to need to be edited, but I was very lucky in that I sort of just, I was probably like walking to school one day, or if it was over the summer, just like doing some random thing. And I thought, oh, it would be cool to do a comment app that focuses on three memories. And I'm a big reader, and I don't easily get distracted when I'm reading fiction. But when I read like personal narratives, if it's like one narrative, I tend to get a little distracted. So I wanted to do three stories because I thought that that could keep readers engaged because I wasn't spending too long on one thing. But at the same time, I wanted to be wary of having these three unconnected stories and then a reader reading it and being like, okay, well, what's the point? Like, none of them really go together. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure that there was a theme within all of them that I discuss at the end of every paragraph, but that each, you know, event was very independent of the other ones to make sure that people understood that this was a progression. And I don't know if people are reading the comment app as I say this, but just to give a brief summary, three moments when I discovered something. So the first one is when I was very little and I discovered a piece of sea glass on the beach, a sea glass marble, actually. The second one is when I went and saw an abandoned house and explored an abandoned house in Maine. And
I love that part, by the way.
Thank you. And the third is when I was on a fossil dig. So yes, I do mention paleontology, but I actually say that I found a spear point, which is an archaeological artifact and does not have to do with paleontology, but I was on a paleontology dig when I found it. And that was when I was older. And so I had these three events, three different points of my life. They all talk about discovery. They all address my innate curiosity, which also was a very prominent aspect of my application. But they're all unique stories, and they're at different points in my life. So I think I try and articulate why and how these three stories affected me when I was these different ages, and like how I used my curiosity when I was, you know, a 5-year-old versus when I was a 9-year-old versus when I was a 15-year-old, or whatever the ages I included yep. were.
Yeah, so. I think I get nervous when students say I want to talk about three different experiences in my application and or in the essay. And I'm always like, oh, geez, I don't know. Like, that's, you know, it's a lot to cram into 650 words or less. And, you know, how are you going to do that? But I think you do a really good job, especially when thinking about the context of the rest of the application and what your voice is. So I think this from a reader's perspective, like generally when we're reading applications, most readers will review the transcript first and testing and things like that, and then they get into the main college essay. That's typically the next one, and then they end with the supplementals. So I think from a planning standpoint, and you may not have even thought this through, but from a planning standpoint, like this, I think gives this like introduction to the idea of curiosity and discovery, and you know, you've had these different moments, and it's good, very good writing, and you tie these things in together really well as well. So I think that it's a really good personal statement. I think by itself, like, I don't know that it necessarily demonstrates like all of the amazing things that you've done, but that's what's important, is that it's not by itself and that there's all of these other places. And I think a lot of times kids have this tendency to want to cram everything into their main college essay, or not even cram, but they want to talk about the thing that they're most proud of, maybe. And maybe that biggest moment of pride is Stampede, or you know, the community service that you did, or research and things like that. But they're not looking at it within the larger picture, and to be able to say, well, you have other areas that you can talk about that. And I think for you, and when I look at your application, you do a really good job of taking advantage of the questions that are asked, and the personal statement plays a really good role of giving an introduction to this idea of, you know, your curiosity and some of the things that you've been interested in. But then you then get into the Brown supplemental, where you're able to talk about different elements. And so we'll talk quickly about the open curriculum question, which for those of you who are listening, Brown generally asks a question. They have an open curriculum where you can kind of broadly explore different topics and take classes across various disciplines, which is very different than a lot of schools where maybe you're restricted into particular classes and colleges and things of that nature. So they asked to tell us about any academic interests that excites you and how you might use the open curriculum to pursue them while also embracing topics with which you are unfamiliar. And so talk to me a little bit about kind of your approach to this, because I think you do a good job of kind of tying in. It's sort of a little bit of like a Y Brown essay, but it's also talking about how you're going to be able to fine tune your interests in particular areas.
Yeah. So I think with that one, this was like over a year and a half ago at this point, so I might not be exactly spot on with how I answer this, but if I remember correctly, I had like a much longer draft of that one that I ended up having, because I mean, I love Brown. I ED'd to Brown. I have so many ways to answer why Brown. But it was, I think this is like a 200 word essay, 200 to 250 words. And so I didn't have room for all of that. And so I think very early on, I was just cutting out a lot. And I do still think that it like gets just to the main point of what I wanted to say, and it didn't need to be longer, because I think I still do an effective job of talking about why Brown, and then also saying why Brown specifically for me, and like why I would use the open curriculum to, you know, foster this curiosity that I have that I mentioned in the Common App, and, you know, succeed at Brown. And I really liked it. I was actually worried, I think, when I was writing this application that too much of my stuff was focused on science, because, you know, I have the other one that we looked at, which was paleontology and like Girl Stampede, but with a paleontology focus. And then I have this one, which I start with, you know, a paleontologist friend or a scientist friend of mine. And then mm-hmm. I have my Common App, which is also kind of related to the whole thing. But I actually think that ended up working in my favor, because it shows a very coherent application, and one that really has like a lot of strengths, but also has this one main through line throughout the whole thing. And people can really, I think, understand my story and like who I am as a person and as a student through looking at those essays. And I liked that essay as well, because I think I just balance like talking about like the scientific aspects of how some scientists study a singular bone in a body, and how that really stuck with me. And then also how I would try and do that same thing, but then also expand my experience at Brown by taking all these classes that I mentioned.
Yeah. And you talk, and I think that sometimes this is missed for students, where they see a why do you want to go here to this school, or why do you want to do this particular program? And they talk almost exclusively about what they're going to do when they get to the school, which I 100% think that there needs to be elements of that. But it also is an opportunity for you to talk about what are the things that you've already done, and how are you going to utilize the institution and the programs that are available to the institution to build off of the things that you've done. And so you talk about, you know, the internships that you've already done, and some of the coursework that you've already been a part of, and how you want to build off of those things. And I think that that's sometimes a missed opportunity for students, where they talk almost exclusively about what they will do, but there's an element of like, okay, why are you prepared for this, and how can you build off of that? So you don't, and especially when it's 200 to 250 words, like that's not a lot of space to get into it. But I think it is important to try. Yeah, it's like, it's just crammed in there a lot of times, but I do think that that's a really important aspect of these why essays, is like try to get elements of the things that you've done to try to provide as much context about who you are and what your background is as well.
Exactly. And I feel like the way I saw it when I was doing the application is that every place where they want you to write something is an opportunity for you to tell them something about yourself. And you should try and tell them different things about yourself in all of these different places. So whether that's, you know, a supplement or your Common App or your activity, like it just everything, you just want to give them information. So even in the case of that, which is very much a why Brown essay, yes, why Brown, but this is why Brown. Like, this is who I am, this is what I've done, and this is why Brown is right for me.
Totally. And then the last question for Brown, which I'll pull up in a second, they say, Brown students care deeply about their work and the world around them. Students find contentment, satisfaction, and meaning in daily interactions and major discoveries, whether big or small, mundane or spectacular. Tell us about something that brings you joy. And I can't even tell you the number of times I've gotten questions about, well, what are they looking for here? And I'm like, that's not, they're not looking for anything. They're looking for you to be creative and to talk about, you know, what you've done. And I'll pull this up in a minute, but like, you definitely take a little bit of a chance here. So what do you remember thinking about this essay? I love it. But did you remember thinking about like, I think this, I'm going to give it a little bit. I'm going to be a little risky on what the response looks like.
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked about this one. This is by far, without a doubt, my favorite essay that I wrote for any college. I had a like extended version that I submitted to another college. I forget what college that I actually like better because I play it up even more. But this is like my favorite, you know, topic that I write about. And to anyone not reading it, I write about a movie that I would always, that I do always watch with my dad called Plan 9 from Outer Space. It's like, it's from, I think, the 60s, and it's known as one of the worst movies of all time, just in terms of production and acting and the script, and literally every aspect of it is just god-awful. And I, like, love watching it. My dad and I have an absolute ball. It's very funny to watch. And when I, like, even before, like, thinking about this essay or, like, what I was, like, just writing it, when I heard about Joy, like, I associate such like an intense joy with watching this movie with my dad that I thought it would be the perfect response. And I know like it is risky. It's very much, you know, not probably what they get a lot of. I start with a quote, which is not always what you're supposed to do because, again, very short essay. It's 250 words and I use probably about 40 of them to write something that isn't even my own words. But I also thought that in the case of this, because for a like long part of the thing, I'm talking about why this movie's so bad. So I thought starting with a quote would be perfect because it demonstrates how bad just in the writing. And that's like the first line of the movie. It just demonstrates how bad it is. And I maintain the show don't tell thing when I'm writing. And so I think I was showing them in that part and not telling them. So that's why I stand by including the quote. But I also think that, I mean, when you think about it, I was trying to think about it from the perspective of someone reading this. And at this point, I'm sure they'd read thousands of essays about, you know, someone's dog or someone's, like, grandfather, whatever it is. And, like, that, I'm sure people can write amazing essays about that. And, you know, props to whoever does that. But at the same time, I wanted to give them something that I knew no one else was going to write about and that was just very out there. And, like, I did take a chance, but Brown is, you know, like, Brown is the type of school who would like you to take a chance and who would want you to have fun with an essay. And I definitely had fun writing this. I still go back and read this one just because it's a good, like, it's a fun essay and it was a fun topic. And this was also one of the ones that took me I fine-tuned it a lot, but, like, once I wrote, like, the first draft, a lot of what I wrote stayed just because there was only one way I wanted to write it and I was able to articulate that and follow through with it, so.
Yeah, and it's authentic too, right? I mean, that's like so there. It's sometimes when a student like tries to be funny or tries to be risky, it comes across as like kind of cheeky or like just sort of lame. This is like it's clearly something that you've thought about that's a part of you, and it just shows it. You get to this and think about it again from the reader's perspective. And I think that's like hopefully the biggest takeaway from this conversation for anybody who's watching and listening is think about it from the reader's perspective, right? And we go back to your main essay, and you write, you know, this essay about your curiosity, and you show these different talk about these different experiences, and they all tie together. Great. So that's one element. Then you have an element about Stampede and your involvement in that and, you know, what that's been like. And so you're talking about this pretty elite experience that you have. Then you're talking about why the open curriculum, why Brown, and you're able to talk about different, you know, I've been a part of different research internships and I feel like I can build off of that in these ways due to my curiosity, coming back to that and tying that in. And then at the end, you get this like, this essay about a terrible movie and you're able to talk about why it's important and of interest to you. And it just adds like a human element to it, I think, amongst a lot of other really amazing experiences that you've had and that we talked about today. So, yeah, I think it's risky in the sense of it's not talking about, you know, your research or internships or whatever, but it's also it's a really selective school. And from a reader standpoint, it's pretty rare that they're going to come across something about this, you know, with that type of delivery. And I think your voice also within your writing remains pretty consistent throughout in just different ways. Right. Sometimes a little bit more professional, sometimes a little bit more like, you know, tongue in cheek kind of a thing. But I think it ties together really well. So it was a super interesting application to look at.
Thank you so much.
When you look back at it now, is there anything that you would change? I always like to ask that. Or obviously it worked out for you, but like if you look at it now, is there something you would do differently, do you think?
It did work out well for me, which I'm very thankful about. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, nothing off the top of my head I would do differently. I spent just so much, like, I can't even describe you how much time was put into every single aspect of my application. Some people are just naturally, they can put it together, no problem. It took me a very long time. And I ended up actually getting deferred from Brown, and I got in regular decision. And even after I got deferred, I was still writing things for Brown and sending a letter of continued interest. And just the whole process took so long and was so... I was so meticulous about it that I think it's hard for me to want to have done anything differently. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to write about other topics. I wouldn't have wanted to get different letters of recommendation. I wouldn't have wanted to include different activities. So I think I put so much effort into it up front that in hindsight, I'm still very content with what I did. Now, had I not gotten into Brown, it would probably be a different story. And I'm sure I would have had areas that I would have wanted to change maybe, but
you can overthink anything, really.
Yeah,
I
really put a lot of time into it, and hopefully, at least according to Brown, I put a sufficient amount of time for me to get accepted. So
I think that's the biggest.
Yeah,
that's a big part of it too. Is like as a student, if you're getting ready to apply, you only get one shot at it. So, you know, put together the best application that you can to put yourself in the best position possible. And whether you get into the school or schools that you're interested in or not. And some schools will read that essay and be like, oh my gosh, this is so good. This is so funny. And then some school might read it and maybe they had a bad tuna fish sandwich for lunch and they're irritated or whatever. And they're like, I don't get it. I don't like it. Like that's just going to happen. As long as you're happy with it. Yeah.
Honestly, I probably wouldn't want to go to a school that didn't like the essay, you know, because
yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, mm-hmm. I like the essay. And so if the school didn't have a sense of humor about it or they weren't looking for that in their essay, like, okay, like I wouldn't really want to go to a school that thinks like that.
Yeah,
so.
Probably not a good fit.
Yeah,
I think that the ED thing is an interesting one too, or an interesting aspect, because I've had a lot of students that I've worked with and that I know from other colleagues that have applied ED, and if you're not familiar, early decision is binding. So in theory, if you're admitted to that school, then you will matriculate, you'll go there. So the schools generally have a higher admit rate for students who apply during the early decision period because they know that they'll enroll. But schools also have a relatively high percentage of students, at least even anecdotally, of students that I've worked with and talked to colleagues about, where they applied ED, they didn't get in, but then internally the school knows, well, this is probably their first choice, so we can't take like 95% of the kids during ED, but it's still pretty high up there for them, so it's still a pretty good chance that you're gonna that they'll end up enrolling. And so you will see a lot of times, you know, students who will get deferred that then get in during the regular decision period. And I think it's just a point of, you know, if you do apply ED that and you get deferred, that doesn't mean that the road is over. It may be more frustrating and challenging at different times, because you now, instead of knowing in December where you're going to go to college, are probably waiting till like March or April. But the road isn't necessarily over at that point.
No, definitely not. And I actually wasn't even sure I was going to go to Brown, because mm-hmm. there were other schools that I had gone into that I liked. And I actually, for me, and I'm sure everyone who gets deferred says this, but in a way, in hindsight, I was a bit glad that I got deferred, because it made me get to actively choose Brown. I wasn't forced to go there. I got to look at all my options, look at everywhere I got in, and say, no, like, I still want to go to this school. Like, I still think it's the best fit for me. And had I gotten an ED, I'm still convinced I would have obviously, you know, loved it, and it would have still been the best fit for me. But there always sort of been the little voice in my head saying, you know, but what if you got in here? Or what if you only are going here because you were forced to go here? So I think that, and like I said, like at the very beginning, I wasn't even thinking about colleges in ninth grade. I'm not the person who, you know, had a dream school from the time they were like 10 years old and they needed to go to Brown. I applied to Brown because I thought at the time that it was going, I ED'd to Brown because I thought at the time that it was going to be the best fit for me and the school of that caliber that I had the highest likelihood to get into. And so maybe for someone who has been obsessed with Brown since 10th grade, EDing and getting in right away would have, or since 10th grade, since like first grade, would have been, you know, good for them, and they would have been very happy to get an ED. And for me, obviously, that would have saved me a lot of sweat and tears.
Headache, maybe? Yeah.
At the same time, I'm very glad that it worked out in the way it did and that I still got to choose Brown, and I get to remind myself of all the reasons I did choose Brown. Yep. You know, so that's what I'll say.
I love it. Well, I think that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk and share your application materials. It's super interesting to go through, and really excited to see what the future holds for you over the next couple of years at Brown. And so thanks again for taking the time. For anybody listening, make sure that you like, follow, subscribe, share, and then check back. We'll be releasing episodes every week, and so we look forward to hearing more great students and learning more about their pursuits. So thanks again for taking the time, and look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great. And go check out, anyone watching, go check out Girls Stampede.
Absolutely.